Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Every day, people and businesses are creating new products. These creative and engineering endeavors are ultimately meant to bring something to market that people are willing and happy to pay for. But are they creating things that people want, need, and are willing to purchase? In today's world, the consumer is more and more demanding and more focused and determined to find the product that meets all of their criteria. And if you don't provide it, no sale. So how do you find out what your customers really want? How do you tell them that you're actually giving it to them? And how do you make sure your manufacturing process is nimble enough to change quickly to meet those consumer demands? This week on the Make It Right podcast, my guest is Chris Rebsman. He is the founder and president at Jupiter Sales and Marketing. With more than 25 years leading successful consumer product companies, sales teams, and a proven success in growing strategic accounts and revenue base and profitability, Chris joins me to talk about his approach to addressing sales challenges. Chris, I think this one's going to be an eye-opener for me, so welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So give us a bit of a background on your career and some insights into some of your successes.
Sure. So I graduated college in 1989, and I got involved in the consumer product goods right out of college. Started working for a company called Springs Industries, which was the largest textile manufacturer in the country. So I was really grinding my teeth in the New York City market and also learning processes and laws, what we consider retail laws or processes and things of that nature, right out of college. So I've been working in the consumer good industries, moved through home decor, food, beverage for the last 30 years. So one of the fortunate things in my career is I've been able to sell and get involved with each channel of distribution in retail. So I've seen a lot of ups and downs, store closures, and also new entities launching. So that's kind of my background, 30 years. And some of the successes that we've had, we've been able to launch programs in retailers such as Target, Walmart, Kroger, Bed Bath & Beyond, and Sprouts and Whole Foods. So we really have a we're really diverse in our product placements, which is a real advantage, because there's not a lot of people in the industry that have that ability to say that they've been able to understand each channel distribution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you have a really unique perspective. So when did you start Jupiter Sales and Marketing?
I started Jupiter Sales and Marketing 10 years ago when I relocated from New York to Utah. Kind of picked up my family and moved, took a year off to go skiing, and then it was time to really do something. And wow. At that time, yeah, so it was during the cash crisis in Wall Street. So we kind of got out just in time. And so I moved here, and I had some friends in the CPG business that needed some sales and marketing assistance, and they couldn't afford their team anymore. So they were in the process of laying off a lot of teams. So I was an inexpensive option to help them kind of keep the sales process and driving sales for them. So that's kind of how it happened. It happened by accident. And then about 2 years into it, I took Jupiter Sales and Marketing seriously as a business, because I felt there was a hole in the market, because entrepreneurs or businesses that wanted to get into the retail market felt that it was kind of a fairly easy process. You know, it's easy to get a product on shelf, and it's a long selling process. And getting a product, whether it be food, beverage, or even a home decor product, getting on shelf is actually the easiest part. It's actually staying on shelf. Grocery stores right now will give a product about a 6 month life cycle. And in that 6 months, if you're not performing to units, ROI, dollars, all that across, they're actually going to pull you off. So you have to actually work twice as hard in those first 6 months. Once you get past those 6 months, then you're evaluated once a year.
You know, and I guess that really explains why sometimes you find a favorite product and it's in the store and it's in the store and it's in the store, and one day you go to get it and it just isn't there anymore. And you're like, you're slammed. That happened to me the other day when I went to buy my peanut butter. I'm like, where's my peanut butter? And I was in a panic, right? but you know, something is going wrong. You watch them go a little bit lower and lower on the shelves, and then one day they're just gone. So let's talk about some of the biggest mistakes you've seen companies making when it comes to pushing a product into retail and trying to get it to stay there.
So one of the things is actually, one of the biggest mistakes is lack of understanding what a marketing plan is. That's probably the biggest mistake. So a marketing plan is driven through, like in these days, social media for consumer awareness. And you have two types of marketing. You have in-store marketing, which you'll see a sale price or you'll be in a flyer. And then you have out-of-store marketing, two completely different components, but they dovetail into each other. The actual marketing outside the door is your social media, consumer awareness, doing couponing. How are you reaching that consumer? How are you identifying that consumer? Who is your consumer? So if someone in that food and beverage space can't answer those questions, they have really not the ability to really place product on shelf, even if it's amazing. Because again, you have such a short life cycle. You have 6 months. And if you can't answer those questions, how are you getting the consumer, whomever you identify that, to the shelf to grab your product off shelf? Mm-hmm. Other ways of doing it is to actually drive in store doing demos. So when you see someone doing a demo, they're actually hired by the company and they're offering your products to the consumer to try. So that's one other way. Another way is to drive or pay when they do, let's just take Kroger, for example, where they do an email blast. So if a manufacturer is involved in one of their email blasts, there's a fee to the manufacturer. That drives consumer awareness. Consumer awareness can also be on poppers, you know, the shelf tags, running sales, and things of that nature. One of the easiest ways in store for a consumer to try is to actually have an end cap. So when you walk into a store, you'll see end caps at the end of each aisle. Those end caps are usually there for what we'll call promotional opportunities when there's a cost savings, or you create kind of a special product assortment. And in retail, what they call them are in and out. So you see it and then it's gone. But what it does is it gives much more visibility to the consumer in trying something when it sits on an end cap. So data will show that an end cap entrance into a retailer sometimes is a better way, a little bit more of a cost to the supplier, but a consumer, a shopper will grab something faster off an end cap than a shelf.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's always pay to play, isn't it? Like that's one of the things that you have to understand is when you want to get your product into a store, you have to pay to play. The retailer's not going to go, oh, I'm so excited to have your product in my store. Sure, do what you like, right? You have to pay to play.
That is correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. And actually one of the most expensive to pay to play is actually Amazon. So Amazon is actually very costly for a manufacturer to play on. The cost of advertising, usually it's 30%. So it's 30 cents of every dollar Amazon takes.
Wow.
To fund their advertising. Yeah. Amazon's very expensive.
So you mentioned that, you know, people have to have their marketing plan and they have to know who their customer is. How hard is that to figure out?
You know, there's one of the expenses up front, which I always consider being smart money for a manufacturer, is to do your research, to do a SWOT analysis, do a gap analysis. And that actually is done in the field, shopping the stores, seeing where everybody else is price point wise. What's your point of difference? And then you can also gather your consumers, kind of do kind of identifying your consumer, and you can actually do age groups and you can actually create little pockets of people for people to just try your products. One of the best things to actually find out who your consumer is to get into a local independent store, try and get feedback directly from the consumer. So, that to me is much more beneficial to a manufacturer than trying to get a group of consumers in a room and taste testing your product. Because in reality, when you're dealing direct with the consumer, you get much more honest feedback, understanding the differentiation between who's shopping the store. So you're essentially talking to the consumer directly, but also you've got to pay attention and people watch. What's the age groups? Who's going to the shelf? And this is all based on consumer research, and it's also a market research. One of the things that we encourage our manufacturers to do is actually shop. And it's not shopping for product, it's to actually spend time in the stores and just not look. Look at the ingredients, look what's on shelf, look at the price points, look at the points of difference, look at the separation and pricing. Where do you fit? What's your niche? If you find something that's $2.99 and in the same category, it's $5.99, now you know there's a hole that you could go into at $3.99 or $4.99. What's your value proposition? So talking to the consumer directly at a store will actually give you a lot more information than any kind of other consumer group panel, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And that's always something. I've actually stopped consumers in the store and just said, listen, I'm launching a new product. So, and this is kind of where we fit on shelf. And it's kind of funny how people are willing to help, but that's how you really get your raw data and your feel for your consumer. Mm-hmm. And again, you also want to plan a targeted plan. Who are you going after? What age group are you going after? Are you going to the millennials? Are you going to the seniors? Are you going to the baby boomers? Things of that nature. So, you know, you kind of need to identify that on your own before you go to market.
How often have you been surprised by what you thought was the customer and then who the customer actually has been?
Very surprised. So we're in the process of, we have our own little side business company called Batch 21. Batch 21 is a skincare product with hemp and hops. So just a real quick story on it. You know, it's a combination of hemp and beer put together. We went out to market, and the funny thing is that it was a men's product. It was really targeted towards men's because men's skincare products are growing pretty fast. So we were trying to get on the wave. And it turns out, this is true, 52% of our consumers are female and 48% of our consumers are male. So being male driven, that surprised me more than anything. That was my biggest surprise in the last 5 years because we marketed it towards men. But yet women have been buying it. Now, women could be buying it for their husbands and boyfriends and things. But, you know, when we're here in a local grocery store and, you know, I've been doing some demos and trying to get some feedback. It's always the women that are buying the product.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Huh? It is.
Yeah. Okay. So what's changed over the years that you've been in the industry? Because I get the feeling you simply can't be doing business like you did 10 or even 5 years ago. So what's been changing and how is it changing?
So because of the e-commerce platforms, the American consumer is becoming much more educated, much more aware. They're doing much more research. They understand what they're buying now instead of just reading the package. So in 10, 15 years ago, the packaging was what you call the silent salesman. You had 5 seconds for the consumer to understand it. They didn't understand it. They didn't buy it. So what's really transforming now is profitability. There's the retail buyers that were actually what we call merchants would actually create the assortment. They're becoming more like CPAs now. They're evaluating product turn. They're evaluating ROI by the inch in a retailer. So the two biggest things that I've noticed, consumers become much more aware. Retail buyers are much more of an accountant versus actually out in the market and creating innovative assortments. So with that being said, the manufacturer, it's much more important for the manufacturer to be the buyer. The more you can do for the buyer, the more business you're going to get from sales direct to the buyer in understanding trends and kind of doing their job. So with consolidation, it's just become much more on the manufacturer. And so manufacturers are doing more of the work more of the actual assortments, more of the buyer's job from a research perspective than they have in the past.
You're listening to the Make It Right podcast, and my guest is Chris Rebsamen. He's the founder and president of Jupiter Sales and Marketing. Over 30 years, he's amassed a wealth of experience getting products to market, and he'll join me again next week to discuss his approaches to the sales and marketing challenges manufacturers are facing in this ever-changing consumer-driven market. I hope you'll join us then. I'm Janet Eastman. Thanks very much for listening to the Make It Right podcast.